We'll call the meeting to order. We do not have a quorum yet, but Representative Junkie, if you could come up when we have a quorum, and we do now. So, Representative Junkie, I'm going to move House File 1972 with the possibility of laying it over with the possibility of going into the omnibus finance bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'll be very brief. This bill basically addresses what we found out was a loophole in the licensing of horse trails and trail riders. As you know, we now have a license to utilize state trails, which I have one up near my district at Sibley State Park, and there's others around the state. In the past, DNR licensed the rider and not the horse, which was interesting because everything else we license the vehicle, whether it's a trailer or an ATV or something else, we license the vehicle. And in explanation of that, I guess I understood that we had some large stables where maybe husband and wife would own 5 or 10 horses, and they didn't want to register every horse. They might ride a different horse every day, so they want to register themselves. Okay, I get that. That's current law. But on the other end of the coin, I have a business, a stable that goes out for hour rides at the stable up on the Sibley Park Trail. Well, you can imagine every rider that comes to ride that stable has to get a license, and it discourages that business. And you know, if you want to ride a horse over the weekend, it'll be $20. If you want to do it for the day, it's $4 or $6 for the day. But it's a cost every time someone gets on the horse. So I actually worked with Representative Hackbarth on this, and he offered some language in policy, and the bill's reflective of that. Basically, it's an either or now. You can either license your business, your stable, at a set fee, or you can license individual horses in that stable up to a set fee, or you can still license your person to account for those that might own multiple horses and want to ride. Either way, you've got the options. DNR requires that permit to be displayed on the person or on the tax, so you have the option of that also. So you don't have to worry about that. You can just give the license to the person riding the horse. Basically, fiscally, which is your community's responsibility, we think it'll actually bring in more money because you do have now a stable license of a few $100s that you maybe aren't being purchased now or sporadically utilized. So we think it's at least revenue neutral, but probably, in fact, may bring in additional funds into that account. So that's the bill. It's real simple. It makes it an either or. There was no opposition in the policy committee to that. And like I said, I worked with Representative Hackbarth on the language. I think bipartisanly, there's no opposition either. That's the bill.
Members, I don't see any questions. We'll lay it over for possible.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members.
Representative Egan.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this bill, first of all, I guess we need to have it moved.
I will have it moved. I will move it. I'm going to move House File 2133, laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus environment finance. Omnibus bill, early in the morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill appropriates $500,000 from the Clean Water Fund to the PCA in order to develop minimal impact design standards for urban stormwater runoff. And what's being done here is it's really a long overdue change that will look at managing our stormwater in a more effective and innovative way. Historically, what's happened is, as far as stormwater is concerned, there's just been the attempt to try to get rid of the water as quickly as possible. That was the earliest stages in the 1970s. There was storage, but this is just allow some of the sediment to contaminants to settle and then get rid of the water. We are now looking at these techniques that would use infiltration and filtration more in mimic nature, and that's what this is really about, to develop, again, a more effective, innovative way of dealing with stormwater. And I do have with me today Julie Westerlund, who is going to testify more on the different techniques that they're looking at.
Before you do that, I do want to make one small amendment to your bill, because you have the money coming from the Clean Water Fund, but if this is laid over for the omnibus bill, it would be coming from the general fund. So members on line 2.3 take out Clean Water Fund and substitute general fund. So if I think that's fairly clear, I don't see any questions. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The amendment is adopted. If you go ahead with that, that just clarifies this thing.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for your time this morning. I apologize to the members of the committee who were here on Thursday, but I do have a brief presentation just to explain what it is that we're trying to do. As Representative Eakin said, we've got some challenges with stormwater management. We know that we've developed the landscape. We drastically changed the way water flows across the landscape, and it sends a lot, significant more volume and rate of stormwater down to our receiving water bodies, carrying with that stormwater flooding, erosion, and a large number of pollutants. And this comes at a significant cost to communities for building infrastructure to deal with that stormwater. And again, as Representative Eakin stated, our historical method of managing stormwater is really to convey it, to get it off-site as quickly as possible through the uses of ditch and pipe. And we discovered kind of what, back in the 1970s, that if you hold on to that water, hold it back for a little while, some of the pollutants will fall out, and the receiving water will be a little bit cleaner. And so through that discovery, the National Urban Runoff National Urban Runoff Program was developed, and this led to the proliferation of stormwater ponds across the landscape. These ponds were developed through a calculation methodology that gave everyone a consistent understanding of the way that these ponds are going to treat our stormwater. And this was developed in 1983, and at the time it was our best technique for managing stormwater. And it continues to be the most common technique for managing stormwater today, but it's now 2009, and we know a lot more about how to manage stormwater. We know that there are much more effective ways to deal with it. We know that these past practices have been ineffective at protecting our water quality and our receiving waters. And we have a handout for you. This is a report from the National Academy of Sciences, which basically has done an analysis of our stormwater management systems and said that these stormwater ponds are not the best way to deal with stormwater. And in fact, stormwater controls that actually infiltrate water, get it back, soaking into the ground where it belongs, are going to be our critical tool for reducing volume and pollutant loading in the future. And the kinds of practices that we're really talking about here are what we call low-impact development. And low-impact development is simply a development philosophy that starts with conservation of critical natural areas in a landscape, because these take advantage of the services that nature provides in using plants and soil to treat stormwater instead of sending it downstream. We're talking about practices that minimize the impacts of development, that reduce impervious surfaces, so we're talking about smaller street widths, smaller building setbacks, so we have shorter driveways, reducing parking lot requirements, reducing building footprints, so we have fewer of those hard surfaces that prevent the water from soaking into the ground and causing the water to run downstream, which causes our big problems with stormwater. Low-impact development also encourages healthy soils and the use of plants to treat stormwater where it falls. The idea here is to get the water soaking into the ground and get that raindrop to stay as close to where it fell, and use those plants and soil to treat stormwater at the source. So you're probably familiar with a number of these techniques. We're talking about things like rain gardens. We're talking about pervious pavement surfaces that allow the water to soak through and store it underneath the ground. And we're talking about practices that have multiple benefits. They have multiple functions, and they provide multiple services. For example, the protection of trees can be a stormwater management practice. And tree protection also gives us climate change benefits, because there's carbon sequestration. They give us air quality. They make our communities a better place to live. Stormwater ponds, which is our main tool for stormwater management, don't do any of those things for us right now. So these low-impact development techniques really provide a lot more benefits than the traditional stormwater management tools that we're using today. The other point I wanted to make about the low-impact development techniques is that these are engineered systems. We know how to design these systems. We know how to get them into the ground, and we know how they function. The problem is we lack that standardized calculation methodology that we had with the stormwater ponds that that causes them to be so prolific today. What we really want to do is make these new, more effective techniques the mainstream, and we need a standardized calculation methodology to help us do that. So what we're talking about is this minimum impact design standards project, and really this project consists of a few different components. One is many of these stormwater management techniques, and there are many, many of them, the rain gardens, the porous pavements, and the way we develop the landscape, the entire approach. And then to take those and run them through calculation methodologies, which gives everyone a consistent understanding of how these technologies are going to perform and how what size they need to be, and so the designers and reviewers can all look at the same calculation and agree that this particular technique is going to get us where we need to be in terms of clean water. And then the third and probably most important is the performance standards. We're talking about standards that are going to result in cleaner water than any standards that we have right now. These are more stringent stormwater standards, water quality standards that are going to lead to improvement of our water bodies and greater protection of our natural resources. So, for example, in a new development, a designer could choose from a whole menu of techniques, from preserving existing trees on the site to reducing street width to a number of rain gardens to even things like community programs such as street sweeping that will allow for greater protection of our water. And because low-impact development and the minimum impact design standards really do affect many different facets of what a community does, from zoning to erosion and sediment control, tree slope, wetland protection, subdivision, stormwater management, and like I said, the community program. One of the other pieces of this mid package is going to be to create a set of ordinance revisions and zoning package that a community can just go ahead and adopt and revise to their own needs, but that works these standards into the local ordinance. So really, what we're looking for here, and what everybody wants, is consistent standards statewide. We all want to know what the requirements are. We want to know how to meet those requirements at the federal, state, and local level. And this mid package will get us to a place where if a community adopts it, they're going to be able to meet all of those various layers of requirements. We want a clear process for design and review that's going to result in cost savings for developers and local governments, and our ultimate goal really is water quality and protection of our natural and cultural heritage here in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. Questions from members? Some members have already heard this, so it's okay.
And Madam Chair, there is one amendment that would need to be added. I guess we did have this in my committee, but evidently it didn't make it through because on line 2.9, the year should be 2013 instead of 2012.
I will move that on line 2.9, the year is 2013 instead of 2012. I see no questions from members. Representative Duncan.
Thank you, ma'am. Chair, I didn't get your name, I'm sorry.
Julie Westerman.
Julie, is this going to be a thing that will be another impediment to construction in Minnesota that would create bureaucracy?
Representative Gunther, we're on an amendment right now. Could confine this to the amendment, then we'll ask questions?
Very well. Sorry about that.
We are on the amendment on line 2.9 to change the date from 2012 to 2013. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The amendment is adopted. Representative Gunther.
Madam Chairman, I just got a big nod and a smile saying that this isn't going to do anything but good things.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we agree. The whole idea is to really streamline the process, especially for developers, so that they all understand what's expected, what's required, and we know how to go ahead and design our landscape to meet the requirements.
Are there questions from members? Comments from the audience? I don't see either, so we will lay this over for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much.
Representative Lilly. Would you like to move House File 1493?
Yes, I would. Thank you very much. I also have a DE1 amendment that I'd like to move, get it in the shape that I'd like to work with.
Okay. Representative Lilly moved House File 1493 with the recommendation that it pass, be returned to Finance with a further recommendation that it go to the Cultural and Outdoor Committee. Representative Lilly then moved the DE1 delete all amendments. We'll move that to get the bill in the shape that the author would like. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The amendment, excuse me, is adopted. Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair and members, by passing the Clean Water Legacy Amendment, the people of Minnesota have provided a unique opportunity to significantly enhance and support the state park and trail system. House File 1493, as amended, is the state parks and trail legacy funding bill. It makes appropriations for the from that fund of the constitutional amendment that passed last fall. It's quite an amazing product. There has many parents. I'm up here, but there's many folks that have different pieces involved. Looking around the table, and many of you have probably mentioned, and some won't. So I hope I'm sorry, but it's quite a team effort. The bill has measurable outcomes and provides for visibility and transparency for the fund for the next 25 years, but it's really shorter than that much of what it's going to do. The bill basically has about five main areas, and just kind of keep those in mind as we go through. The first area will be access to the outdoors through conservation, education, interpretive services. The second main area will be resource management. The third main area, an additional area, will be facility management. Four will be modernization, so we'll see some solar efforts, the MP3s, if you will, and mapping. And then the final area, I think, is kind of a joint area dealing with modern times that we're in right now and putting people to work, and then opening up more of our state trails and parks to folks as hopefully staying more local, staying in Minnesota, and using our great trail system and assets that we have. Through Mary Murphy's committee, she kind of had many of the stakeholders sit down, and I'm sure many of you in the crowd, as I look around, have participated in these goal-setting efforts, and I think we really hit the ball hard as far as matching up to many of these goals and achieving what she's asked for, the state, you know, and that's been input from lobbyists, it's been input from members, and so I think it's really quite a good bill. I think I'd like to go through the bill if I can. and probably everybody has a copy, I hope. And kind of starting on page one, if you will, going towards the bottom, much of what you'll see is, you know, clearly we want to have goals that are visible and achievable and being able to be seen by the Minnesota public. Again, that kind of goes back to the Mary Murphy's goals. We want to make sure that at the end of the day, that Minnesota, the people of Minnesota know and they're able to see what they voted for, that that we have measurable outcomes. They'll see a variety of different things as we go through this bill and around the state of Minnesota, but they'll also, you know, there'll be tangible results so that we can see how this is, since voting for that, you can see how it's improved the life of Minnesota. So, anyways, again, to the bill or the delete all amendments on page one, we set a goal of attracting 350,000 additional visitors. Going to 2.3, there's a marketing campaign that's, you know, enhanced website and efforts in that area. And going to 2.9 is starts talking about, this is some of the effort that Representative Knuth has worked on, and starting a Minnesota Naturalist Corps, and there'll be more verbiage related to that later, but we're adding folks in that area. In 2.13, the block there, we're adding full-time folks that'll be naturalists in our park, and the goal there again is that people, when they bring their family, they have a positive experience at our state parks and trails. And these naturalists, so they're going to be full time. And again, if you look at the 2.15, the focus is on family and children programming, and enhancing again the experience as people come out into the Minnesota parks and trails. 2.17, we're going to be using this money to reopen many of the, and there's a list of some of the things that have been closed, opening or reopening some of the visitor centers. 2.22, again, this is kind of trying to reach some of the modern changes, and adding MP3 players to the parks and trails, and touchscreen computers and those sort of things, which is interesting. I mean, some people argue either go to the natural parks or to nature to maybe get away from some of that, but it's interesting. I believe this is a big initiative for the governor. The governor and others see the value of that, and many of our kids probably won't leave their houses unless they're able to continue to be hooked up. And I don't know if any of you, I find as an adult too, it's kind of nice. It's nice to be able to maybe take one cell phone call and then you can check back in with your family, sort of a thing. So, anyways, that's just kind of a, I think we're all a little more techy than we want to be. If you look at 2.27, again, this is Representative Knuth's, some kiosks and others. I'm not sure who all was Representative Knuth's involved with that, but kiosks and trying to enhance that, and again, working on that. It's turning to on the 3.3. One of the things that we found is that we want to continue to work on trail maps and those sort of things, and so that the money will be used on enhancing trail maps and having that and signage. So that's going to 3.82 also. If you go to 3.1, one of the things that is the goal of this is that we don't do as good of a job in Minnesota being a full season, offering a full season kind of scenario, so we're going to enhance cross-country skiing at least 10 state parks, which I think is good and opens it up to a mall or more full kind of a year. Now we're kind of switching into another section with restoration, and so you can kind of see the numbers as we work through there. 3.16, 700 additional acres of state. Okay, that's not what I wanted there. But restoring at least 700 acres. And then 3.2, again, there's invasive species in 3.20 and 3, you know, in that section. Later on, and moving down 3.27, burning, and then prescribed burnings, and then and restoring, which is a big part of this effort down at the bottom, because we've really not been able to do as good of a job in these different areas as we would hope. So, switching over then to 4.1, we're introducing facility maintenance to the facilities around the state. And again, and if you look at 4.5, it's trying to enhance and open up our facilities to be more handicap accessible, for example. 4.8 is quite a bit of rehab projects. What we find is everybody wants a trail in their district, and everybody wants a facility, but we want to make sure that we're taking care of what we've done. Again, I kind of want to go back to the actual Constitution amendment in this section, and it's phrased a little different than other parts of the Constitution, and I think it's interesting. I always go to the word support, so that's kind of what this is about, is supporting what we have and enhancing and making sure it's of good quality as we move forward in Minnesota. Again, the philosophy is that if we're doing a good job and maintaining it, that people are going to keep coming back and continue to use it and get out there. So, at 4.16, we'll get into the one of the bigger key initiatives of this bill, and Representative Knuth is and others have kind of led the charge on this, and this is her bill that's been incorporated. And there's quite a huge effort in the regards of solar and at different park facilities, and she can stand for questions on much of that, but it's really quite exciting, a great opportunity to change the landscape in Minnesota and to hopefully do a much better job with these solar projects. I know the DNR has done some in the past, but it's just to add to that and continue to go that further. And you get to 5.21, we start to get into kind of the jobs piece and getting folks out working, and by getting out and fixing up what we have and then moving forward. And that's Representative Hansen is kind of incorporating his bill on Minnesota Conservation Corps. Some of this is going on now, but it's greatly enhanced through this opportunity of the constitutional amendments, and pretty exciting. If you look at 5.29, there's quite a bit of prairie restoration, and you know, more specific about that. 6.4 is more of the solar grant program. And then when you get down at the bottom of that page, 6.3, we start to get into the general grant. Using the plan is to use the current existing system that the DNR has. They have a grant program that, from what we're all hearing, is quite good. So we continue to use that and trust that they would be good stewards and help the process. Getting some smiling and nodding, so hopefully that's true. No. Switching over to page 7 on 7.16, part of what we have to do is to move forward with a plan for the future. We have many aspects. We've got short-term stuff in here. We've got asking them to set up a plan for the funding as we move forward. So that's in 7.16. One thing that I'm kind of personally excited about is, well, I'm excited about the whole bill, but on 7.21, what we're trying to do there is to come up with a logo. Again, going back to Representative Murphy's committee and then through the work here too as well, is that when people voted on that constitutional amendment, we really want some sort of labeling, some sort of logo, some sort of something that we can put on the conservation workers, the conservation corps, the, you know, on an actual project, you know, on an arts project, on a trail. So this is to work on a logo and some sort of marketing campaign so that, you know, when we're buying that land through the facade or those sort of things, that we'll have some sort of logo that shows up on many of these projects. So that's quite exciting. Again, switching or going down to 7.32, folks want to, we want to hear back. So we want to report back to the legislature, and so that's going to be the commissioner and their team is going to report back to the legislature to let us know how things have progressed. And, as you get into 8.7, you can see the metro funding then, and some of that, and then on 8.21, there's some money there set aside to help the Legislative Coordinating Commission to, you know, to offer further accountability and oversight there. And again, with the auditor in 8.29. So here on 9.1 is some more specifics about the Minnesota Naturalist Corps. And again, there will be... the Commissioner of Natural Resources in 9.4 shall develop the program, and then it kind of sets the goals, and then there's going to be mentoring involved, and again, uniform patch, you know, we're trying to create some of that, and then so there's the details of the program there, and then down at the bottom, we don't intend to have any displacement of the current employees. 10.turning over the Parks and Trails Fund and how that's going to work, and there's some matching involved in that program. 10.2, the Parks and Trails Grant Program, it spells out the criteria and goals. Again, the goals, you know, for much of this, if you look down at 10.34, is kind of connectivity, you know, moving people around so people can be connected from one area to another. Number two is to opportunities for commuters, and then certainly then the third one there is to provide enhanced public safety. And again, this is a match kind of program. So I think it's pretty clear that just kind of generally going through the bill. I had an opportunity yesterday just to spend a few minutes to watch the debate on the House floor last year of this bill. It was on Valentine's Day that we heard the conference report back, and I thought one of the interesting things, I just kind of was teasing Deb Scalzi, Representative Scalzi earlier, but one of the things that she said, and I thought it was a good quote, he said, the largest group of recreational interest, according to the DNR, is the walkers, the bikers, and the bird watchers. And obviously the parks and trails folks are big participants in that. And I think it's really an exciting opportunity that Minnesotans, you know, that by supporting this amendment and moving forward, I think clearly Minnesota is a great state already, but I think by these enhancements, it'll continue to be even better. So I'll stand for questions, I guess, at this point.
Members, what our procedure is going to be here is we will have questions for Representative Lilly from the members. Audience testimony tonight. If members want to propose amendments, they need to be with Ms. Duenhager by 3 o'clock today, and then he will get all the amendments back. back out to people by 3:30. And we will reconvene tonight at 6:30, where we will talk about any amendments, take audience testimony. But just so everybody knows what's going on, we'll take questions now for Representative Lilly from members. I thought it was a good bill, Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair and members, again, I just really want to say again that this is, you know, I was very much helped through this process, and it's very much a team effort. And I think we'll find, you know, there's, you know, when you look at the details, and I'm sure as the day goes by, there'll be some people that aren't perfectly happy with every number in the bill. But I really think it's fair. As we go forward, I think it's a fair bill. And I find that to be a Minnesota value. Not everybody's going to get exactly what they want. I think there's some great vision in here with the solar and the putting people to work with the Conservation Corps, and they'll be around the state doing projects. It's really pretty exciting, and I think we'll have more people out using our system. The DNR's been great to work with. Judy Erickson's been really a blessing, and many others and members have helped create this this bill, and been nice to incorporate many of their projects. And so, again, I'll stand for questions, and maybe there isn't any, and I'll be available on the House floor if people want to smack me around or whatever they want to do.
I don't think they're going to be smacking you around, but we will lay 1493 over and bring it up again this week.
Representative Virginia.
Thank you. I move that House File 1973 be recommended to pass and returned to finance with the recommendation that it be re-referred to the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division.
To the bill.
I have amendment DE1 to get the bill in the order that I would like it, and I will move DE1.
All in favor of the DE1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted.
Thank you. Members, this is the other bill that we're bringing up today, and it's the Clean Water Fund recommended appropriations. And I'm going to, rather than go over the spreadsheet, I'm going to go over the bill. I think it will be easier for you to understand what we have done here. A lot of effort by a lot of folks, and I really thank the committee for all its work on pulling this together. It's good to have a strong team. Just as in the Parks and Trails bill, all appropriations in this act are one time only. And the reason that is because we have requested long-term plans for this money, and that bill has already gone to Representative Murphy's committee. This is we sent a bill to Representative Murphy's committee for long-term plans for parks and trails. So that's on its way. So you will not see in the spreadsheet that spending for House for 2012 and 13. And the reason is that this is all one-time money. We are not trying to set precedent. What we are waiting for is the long-term plan, but meanwhile we have lots and lots of work to get done. And with that, I will start through the bill. One of the first thing we have at the bottom of 118 is money to the Department of Agriculture. We are not, on the spreadsheet, you will see numbers for the Department of Agriculture that is not in this bill. This will be reconciled and Representative Murphy's committee, but I have the numbers in here just so you can see that in the end we exactly reconcile with the governor's numbers. And so that's just a, we're not carrying those pieces of legislation, but we have to make sure everything reconciles. Okay, so, but we do have one thing that's going to the Department of Agriculture, and that's a study to analyze three sub-watersheds for changes in agricultural runoff and an evaluation of what best management practices are. And so that's that first study. That was a bill from Representative Doty. The public facilities recommendations, you've heard about them in this committee. I don't think there's any reason to discuss them again because these are identical to the governor's recommendations. When you get to the pollution control agency, you will see something that is different, that we do not have the assessment and monitoring in this bill, and that's because it will be in the general, in our omnibus bill. And the reason we chose to go that route is because of our sensitivity to the supplant issue. It's been a traditional function of the PCA to do water monitoring and measurement. And I was thinking if I went to court against somebody who was saying you were supplanting, I think they'd win if we put the measuring and monitoring in this bill rather than in the omnibus bill. So we will put it in the omnibus bill at the 10-year level. That bill isn't out yet, but that's how we are going to be doing it, so that 10 years will be done in the first, so each year 10% will be done. So we're following the models that we set up last 2 years ago, and so that 10% of the CMDL in each of the years, the money that PCA asked for a database and for rules is in this bill. You'll see next on 312, the beneficial reuse is of wastewater. I thank PCA for helping write this language. On 323, this is the PCA request for groundwater assessment, and you'll see we're following. We asked them for some more specific language, and they gave us more specific language, and we put the more specific language in here because we are trying the best we can for Minnesotans to show the outcomes from this money. On 4.1, this is a retest of the Minnesota River for biology, for the biological indicators. The river was tested in the early 90s or the mid-90s, and we've put a lot of money into the Minnesota River since then. And the question is, do we need to do a little bit of mid-course correction, or are we on track? And the only way to look at that is to actually re-measure the river the way it was measured originally. The PCA has a Clean Water Partnership Program. We had many requests, bills from lake associations and other associations wanting to work on their own stuff in their own area. A lot of enthusiasm, and we weren't putting that enthusiasm to work. So this is to enhance the Clean Water Partnership Program. The PCA suggested we give priority to prevention projects. That is what we have done. It doesn't mean that can't be other things, but that's what they suggested. Okay, on line 4.26, we are giving money to PCA to evaluate the water coming out of our waste water treatment facilities, testing upriver, doing a variety of those. The engineers, the good engineers and scientists at the University of Minnesota have told us that they can deal with some of these endocrine disrupting compounds, but they need more information. And some of the things that they're going to recommend to us in the end, I think, are going to be as simple as we've got to hold water longer before we put it into the river. But they need this kind of information to do the good work that scientists and civil engineers can do. 4.33 is Representative Scalfi's coal tar bill, which we've recently heard, so I don't think we need to explain it. However, we did give some money to local units of government, knowing that they're going to have to do some cleanup, and we're giving just to maybe see how this cleanup is going. But we want to make sure we don't exacerbate the problem while we're cleaning up. So if communities will agree to not exacerbate the problem, then we'll give them some money to help them clean it up. All right. The St. Louis River money, as FPCA requested, is in here. The DNR, you'll see the first thing, four things are identical to what was requested in the governor's bill. And that's to work on the TMDL, and this is the language says. This is the language from the DNR. On 6.17, we have appropriated money to acquire LIDAR. To the extent that this money can be spent, we do want the commissioner to utilize staff, department staff, wherever possible, and only contract out where they must. But I think everyone that we've talked about, and as we've talked to Representative Murphy's committee, is convinced that we need some more base data in order to do our job better and to spend less money, because we really know the science out there. Okay. 7.1 is Representative Hansen's bill for the Mississippi River critical area. That I am reminded every day, since I drink the water of the Mississippi River, how many people drink that water and how many more people will be drinking that water in the future. And as other communities, like in New York, have protected their drinking water source, that has not been something that we have done much of in Minnesota. And we have relied instead on cleanup. Here is a little bit of protection for our drinking water source. On 7.25, we are providing additional money to work on the atlases. I think you all know about that. When we get to balance, this is a little bit different in the language, but certainly we're giving the money to Bowser. We're giving a lot of money to Bowser. This is money to keep water on the land. In Bowser, again, we had the question of, are we going to be substituting this money? And we thought if we rewrote a little more carefully, and I'm going to choose my words carefully now, that the direction to Bowser is to keep water on the land, this different than the direction they have had before. And I think this is the direction that makes sure that we are not supplanting traditional sources of funding. So what they're going to do is have the ability to do permanent easements on riparian buffers of up to 100 feet. That's the first section of money. The second section, excuse me, is for grants to watershed districts and watershed management organizations for the installation of proven and effective water retention practices. And there's some listed, but you've heard, and it was just a coincidence that you heard some more water retention practices talked about this morning. But I think the total agreement here is in order to protect our water, we've got to keep water on the land. We've just heard that again and again. And then there's a third grant program for Bowser. Again, this is a more broad program, but underlying it all is keeping water on the land. In 9.26, is money for permanent conservation easement on wellhead protection areas. Remember, we have a drinking water mandated in this under the Constitution. And actually, the constitutional language led off with protect drinking water sources. And I think there were a lot of folks that I heard from never got beyond that. As soon as they saw that, they checked the box and said, let's vote for this. So we have some money for feedlots on riparian areas. I think there'll be feedlots in the base budget too. It'll be different. But this is on riparian land to make it work for the new clean water money. Money again for the Conservation Corps for restoration, maintenance, and other activities under the Bowser section. And then some general rider language that we use. And then the Department of Health is just exactly what you heard. They were more specific with us, so we could put that specific language in this bill so Minnesotans could see exactly what they were buying for their money. To the University of Minnesota, there are two sections of money. One for the continuing of the geological the atlas, and secondly, while the bill has left this committee for Representative Murphy's committee to do the long-term, to do the 23-year study of our water, we are carrying the money here just to make sure that everything balances out. That's similarly with the money you will see to the Legislative Coordinating Commission and for audit. This is another bill that we have sent already to Mary Murphy's committee. It's a little unusual to carry this in this bill because that bill has not passed, but we did want in the end to have a bill that totally balanced. Now you'll get into some of the statutory language, and I think folks have seen most of this already. As bills came forward, the first is in the wellhead protection. There's the coal tar language on 1515, the Mississippi River critical area on 1522. This is language that you've seen before, members, many times. There's the endocrine disruptor monitoring. This is for the wastewater treatment. This language is a little bit different than the language you saw because we wanted to make some chemicals absolutely tested and leave the option open for testing other chemicals. That's the only difference you'll see. On 2114, you'll see the coal tar study language. You'll also see some language that will allow money to go to local units of government for cleanup of these stormwater ponds that have turned out to be polluted. With that, members, I'm happy to answer questions.
Have any questions?
I have a question for the portions of the bill that are authored by Representative Hansen, so I can wait until he's in the room.
That was easy. Any other questions?
Well, we can lay this over for this evening if you want
to. Well, we'll lay this over till this evening then.
Thank you, members. You have been a leader in... Representative Loeffler, can you come down? Yes. We are going to take your bill first. You have been a leader in working on forest protection, and of course we are hearing the bad news that a lot of us expected. So I think this is a good opportunity for us to have a discussion in committee. So I am going to move House File 2262 and to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Environment Finance Omnibus Bill. Welcome to the committee, and if you could tell us about what's going on to start with before we do the bill, I think that's important, and I want to hear from DNR and Ag if they're here.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Today will be a day that you'll long remember if we're not successful in dealing with an outbreak of emerald ash borer. Other states that have battled it have spent many, many years and many, many millions of dollars tearing down millions of trees, unfortunately, and we all know how much we value our trees in Minnesota. It has just been confirmed that emerald ash borer is at our doorstep if it hasn't already crossed over. It's been found right near the confluence of Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, right in that little tiny area. The first confirmed sighting was at Victory, which is a small town on the Wisconsin side of the river. But it is so established that there are dead trees, which means it has probably been in the area for 6 to 10 years. And it is suspected that it was brought by people bringing firewood to recreational cabins from quarantine areas and other states that have been heavily infested. It's known that some of the property owners there are from other states that have serious infestations. And so the Department of Agriculture has been sending down teams to analyze the impacts on the Minnesota side. And it's emerald ash borers in general travel only about 2 to 3 miles a year, but they can hitch a ride, particularly on firewood. And it is a significant issue. We have been preparing plans that you will hear about and the bills are addressing, but quite honestly, we're not at the level of preparedness and planning that I would hope we'd be before this came upon us. And so with that, I might let you hear from the state agencies who've been involved. They have been, I should say that responding to this is a state-federal partnership, working with U.S. APHIS through the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They're the lead federal agency on responding to these sort of pest outbreaks. And because of its location and it being a multi-state effort, there is an effort to get all states in the area to take this seriously and evaluate the current situation. And I believe Mr. Gearfiso was going to be here. I'm not sure if I see him yet. From the Department of Agriculture. I can tell you, I know that they've had a busy day and they've been back and forth. Ed Edwards, Clint, would you like to step up and share?
Madam Chair, Representative Leffler, I apologize. Our staff person, Gearfiso, is supposed to be here and just called me and let me know he's on his way. So I expected that he was in the room already. I apologize.
Well, Madam Chair, while we're waiting, I can also say in terms of looking at how one successfully deals with this, one of the key issues is to have a clear chain of command. It's like, you know, public health outbreaks of infectious tuberculosis or anything else. You have to have an incident span structure. And it is clear we have established in statutes that the Department of Agriculture is the lead agency in responding to any kind of infectious outbreak of a tree or plant type of threat. But they are assisted and supported in that by allied agencies like the Department of Natural Resources. And one of the things that we learned in the Forest Protection Task Force, a copy of the report which you have, the Forest Resources Council staff back, we had everyone around the table, local governments, landscapers, people from the nursery industry, people who are involved in master gardening and tree advisors, and it was clear that while we have done well at sort of doing the first level of response, one of the areas that really needed some more definition and action that I think is still going to be a challenge to us in the future is defining the local government role. in responding to this and dividing up financial responsibilities, which is, of course, always of key interest to everyone who's involved in responding to this.
This is a finance committee, and of course that is our major concern, though we do not have the agriculture budget. Perhaps the agriculture department can lead us off by before their folks get here, and I hope Mr. Tomlinson will come down and talk about what is in DNR's budget for this year for dealing with this issue. So if you want to help us out with that.
Madam Chair, Representative, the Department of Agriculture in its the Ag Committee passed its budget out of the omnibus budget out of its Finance Committee today, and there was a small reduction in integrated pest management strategy that the I'm trying to remember the things that the Ag Committee actually funded. There was a small reduction in integrated pest management activities in urban areas. Overall, however, our invasive species program for dealing with emerging pests was not reduced at all, and that was not a proposal in the governor's budget. There was a report that we proposed eliminating, but that was a duplicative report in that we already report on the overall plant protection duties, plant protection division's duties, and not just on the, and just wanted to reduce duplication.
I mean, we have had discussions about the financial consequences of emerald ash borer, that's what we said before, and dealing with it can, stopping it can be very expensive. Is there sufficient dollar in your account to do that?
Madam Chair, Representatives, I believe that there are, we have a strategy for dealing with emerging pests, and I believe we have dollars for dealing with emerging pests within the context of a, in the budget situation that there is, we wanted to make sure that we are able to do the, I'm shaking on my feet here, and Deer really knows this stuff a whole lot better than I.
Well, we can wait for him to come to ask that question, and maybe Mr. Tomlinson would like to come down and help out with that until he gets here.
Madam Chair, I can tell you that that was an issue that the Forest Protection Task Force looked at, and you'll see in the bill before you that there's a recommendation for a $5 million emergency forest pest response account to enable us to fund and immediately be able to activate. We surveyed other states that have dealt with these outbreaks, and typically it takes 6 to 9 months to negotiate with the federal government what their share will be. There is no guaranteed share. It's not a set percent. It is a negotiation. As you can imagine, as the cost of this has grown from year to year, as more and more states are involved, as the negotiations are much more difficult. The model for this is the Forest Fire Fund that the Department of Natural Resources administers, in which when there's a major fire like the Ham Lake Fire, there's no question about having to run back to the legislature or others for funding. It's available in that account, and then they refuel it with additional funds in other ways. And so this was established or recommended to be set up as a revolving account that would be paid for out of future state appropriations and federal resources once those were secured.
I think what we now have somebody who can help us out. And the basic question here is, we've been expecting emerald ash borer, and it is with great regret that we hear it's on our doorstep. Is there sufficient dollar in the governor's budget to pay for the containment of this problem we're having on our border?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Deer Friso, and I'm the Director of the Plant Protection Division in Minnesota Department of Agriculture. My apologies for being late. I was sitting in the wrong room. that's a difficult question to answer until we really get a better handle on the infestation at hand. If right now the federal government has about $22 million that's available for emerald ash borer that they utilize to assist states with. And that assistance is primarily limited to detection, surveillance, outreach, and those sorts of things. They are not funding eradication sorts of efforts. Many states have tried to do eradication. States such as Michigan have spent close to $50 million attempting to do eradication and have not been successful. And so until we get an understanding and do a delimiting survey and understand what the potential infestation that we may have, it's not known to be exist yet in Minnesota, that's a hard question to answer.
Oh, I mean, but I think it's a relevant question for right now because we're doing our budgets. It is here, so we have to plan ahead. We won't be in session when you have found out exactly the extent or what you need to do. So I have a couple of questions from members, first Representative Hansen, then Representative Hackbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Friso, could you maybe just tell the committee what the status is right now and what's happened in the last few days and what's going to happen the next few days and just what, under existing law, what authorities the agencies in the state have and their execution of those authorities.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Hansen. Last Friday, there was a report of a possible emerald ash borer in a small town called Victory, which is just off the extreme southeast corner of the state of Minnesota. On Monday afternoon, it was confirmed that was, in fact, emerald ash borer. We had a conference call with the state of Wisconsin and also Iowa because of the close proximity within a mile of Minnesota. The situation is that the trees are dead, and generally when you have dead ash trees, that's an indication that the insect has been there for quite a number of years, from 5 to 10 years. The emerald ash borer travels about 2 miles a year on its own, not any kind of human assistance. So just looking at that and the number of natural ash trees in that area, we strongly suspect that Minnesota has the potential to be infested. The department does have the authority to conduct surveys. We have the authority to go onto private property and to do an analysis to find out how many are there. And perhaps to get back to Madam Chair's question, if we had to have some immediate resources to do some sort of a delimiting survey, we would probably need 10 to 15 staff during the summertime. And what we would like to do is focus our attention on Houston County and some of those surrounding counties and spend the summer and really get a good understanding. And that would be about between $150,000 and $175,000 for the immediate task of doing that assessment. And then from there, making the determination of some sort of eradication measure were needed. Other states have set anywhere from $500,000 to $5 million to do those sorts of eradications. So I hope I've answered.
Representative Hackbar. Well, Madam Chair, I raised my hand when you asked the question, is there enough money in the governor's budget to eliminate this problem? And of course there's not. I mean, that's like asking the question, do we have enough money in the budget to eliminate, any other evasive, whatever it might be. And as you know, and as I know, you can't stop these things. I mean, it's just not going to happen. I mean, maybe you can ask the question, do we have enough money in the budget to maybe check it out and try to put the brakes on it or slow it down or something like that? But of course we're not going to have enough money to eliminate and eradicate.
Well, I think that's going to be for the scientists to tell us.
Madam Chair, we've just heard testimony that there's been a number of other states that have been trying to do that and spending millions and millions of dollars to try to do the same thing.
Madam Chair?
One of the things that we looked at was a government accounting office report that looked at how other states had lost control of a variety of tree pests to the point that it really wasn't manageable and it cost them tens of millions of dollars. And basically, you can summarize the major findings as it wasn't detected quick enough because there weren't enough eyes on the trees in all parts of that particular state. And then valuable time was lost, either because they had not clearly delineated who was responsible for what and had a lot of infighting between agencies and between levels of government, or because there weren't enough resources for them to activate plans that they had on paper, but they weren't able to financially activate as quickly as they needed to. And so we can learn from the lessons of other states, and that's part of what informed the work of the task force report and the appropriation request before you.
Are there other questions for members here?
Representative Sankoris and Representative McNamara. Thank you, Madam Chair. What was the motion for the bill? Are we going to move it on its own or hold it over for possible inclusion?
The latter.
And Madam Chair, and then I'm wondering, what are we going to, you know, we've got to make some cuts.
I know.
And to ask for this kind of money from the general fund, I can understand that maybe we should be funding the Department of Ag for what they need to do. I mean, this is their area. And if they weren't funded in their own bill, maybe we can do something for them. But to do this kind of money, these millions and millions of dollars, I don't know where we're going to get money, Madam Chair, and what are we going to cut from other areas to make up for this?
That's what we're discussing right here.
Well, I look forward to that, Madam Chair, when we finally sit down and put together the omnibus bill.
This is the preliminary discussion for that. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Loeffler, for bringing this issue before us, and especially under the unfortunate circumstances. Madam Chair and Mr. Friesel, can you say, you and I and Representative Hansen did, and thank you for including me in some discussions earlier today. It seems like there's probably an immediate need to get some folks down in the ground in Houston County to evaluate where we're at. You made mention, I heard you talk about the $150,000. Is that what you're anticipating the department's resources would be? Would that be like in this biennium we're in now, from now until June, to evaluate where you're at and how many people potentially could you... I know you're very early, only a matter of hours since the detection, but what more information to elaborate on Representative Hansen's question?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, we've done some just very rough estimates, and that's just based on if we had the ability to hire another 12 to 15 seasonal staff to basically do a very high-intensity grid trapping of the area and also some visual surveys looking at dead trees. One of the very unfortunate things about this particular insect is that we do not have very good survey tools, and so it takes a lot of resources to find that. And secondly, we would use some of those funds for some very focused outreach and education. The reality is most of these infestations have been found by the general public. They haven't been found by government agencies. They haven't been found by scientists. They've been found by the public, and it's by the more we can do to make the public aware of and to report back to us. So that's another aspect of how that funding would be used. We think there's a very immediate need. Right now, these insects are in a larval form. They're underneath the bark. So the faster we can move before the beetles come out, the sooner you can get a handle on the infestation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Friesel, don't we need to get people down on the ground in Houston County to let the residents, the cities know the importance of not moving any ash wood especially, and to cut, if they cut any trees down, they have to be chipped or burned, and into relatively small chips. This is really serious, and for those folks that don't know, the ash tree is the most popular street tree and reforestation since the demise of the American elm, and we have them in every community from Representative Loeffler's large Minneapolis community to the little town of Caledonia and Houston. So you're saying at least a dozen people on the ground that could be in the intern level. Madam Chair, I just hope as we lay this bill over that we realize the importance of this. This is really, really serious stuff, and unfortunately this test doesn't have a known way of getting rid of it. We have nothing but control the spread and the unfortunate.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, we have diverted staff from some of our other programs. We've taken some nursery staff, some seed inspectors. We've also, DNR has been generous enough to loan us some of their, or assist us with some of their staff, as well as some of the federal agencies, and those staff went down there today and have begun some preliminary surveys. And we have also begun some of that notification process that you spoke of. We've contacted some of the municipalities. I know Bob Fitch from the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association has been in contact with his membership. We have identified that there is about a dozen nurseries in Houston County alone. There is a potential that that county would be quarantined, which means any ash material from either firewood or nursery or mills would be not be permitted to move out of that county.
And to the other members on the committee, what this means, for instance, Mr. Friesel, if a local nursery in Caledonia, I believe Caledonia, Representative Hansen would know better, but it might be the largest community in the county, if a nursery in that community has already taken delivery of green ash trees, they will be quarantined, they will have to dispose of them, get rid of them, and there will be no compensation from the state of Minnesota or the federal government, and you actually will require them to do that. What about in the case of lumber, that being an area of the state that has some lumbering going on, what about the movement of ash to and from potential mills? Do you know, are there mills in Houston County?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, there are mills in Houston County. How much ash wood they use, I don't know. Ash is typically not a wood that's used for many things. It's sort of restricted to it. So whether they use ash or not, that I don't know. But if they do use ash for any material, even if they're shredding it, they could be subject to quarantine restrictions as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Friesel, I think you mentioned earlier this morning that this is in Victory, Wisconsin, and this is in the town, so it's kind of the boulevard trees in the town. So if we take this to Minnesota and we look at public costs, rather than, Representative McNamara was talking a little bit about the private costs for the nurseries, but if we talk about communities and what are the communities, let's say a small town that has ash trees, if there's a detection, what are they required to do now? And then I'd also like to hear from DNR about public entities that they're responsible for, state forests or trails in there. And why this is relevant, Madam Chair, is that in the Parks and Trails bill that we discussed this morning, we had some money in there for invasive species response and detection, and we put some money in there for things, hoping that this day wouldn't come, but being prepared. So I'm looking for a little bit of public cost and maybe public responsibility. What do the local units of government have to do, and then what does the DNR have to do?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, there is no funds available either from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture nor from the federal USDA APHIS to reimburse the public, whether it be a municipality or private citizens. There are very effective treatments for emerald ash borer that a private citizen could use for their personal tree, but it's very labor intensive and they're very costly, so it's tree by tree, and those are treatments that really don't work for a forest sort of situation. At the federal level, as I said, that $22 million that's available for the EAB program, none of that is available for municipalities. It only goes for surveillance, so frankly the cost would be borne by that municipality, and what that number is, I don't know until we really get a better handle on how widespread or unwidespread it is.
Madam Chair? Madam Chair, that was one of the reasons why we had suggested the $30 million for the relief program to reestablish sort of that public engagement in managing and keeping eyes on our trees. Quite honestly, we've gone really backwards with the cuts in local government aid and other pressures on cities. It was just in the paper, I mean, Inner Ring Suburb has laid off their forester. Other cities are not assigning public works people to doing anything with trees other than if there's storm damage or if it's a threat to the public. We need to rebuild the public infrastructure and so that all cities are prepared and counties to deal with potentially these issues, as well as to have someone trained on staff who will notice when there's a problem. We're only talking about Houston County in this situation because there were dead trees that someone finally called to someone's attention and they followed up. My suspicion, and I hope it's not true, is that there is EAB in other parts of Minnesota as well. And like in other states, you're more likely to not see it in the areas that don't have professional foresters or people who've been trained. There has been started a fledgling effort through the Department of Natural Resources with the University of Minnesota to train first detectors. That needs to be ramped up further, and to get our tree care advisors, which is a long-term program that we've had engaged. But in some cities, I know that the ask population is as much as 50% of their trees. I know the city of Minneapolis has told me that they expect it's 19% of the tree cover within our city. In Michigan, where they had cities where they basically clear-cut most of the trees, they saw water use going up 30% in some communities just because it just bakes, you know, and air conditioning energy costs go up as well. And so I think it's interesting that I wasn't able to find a bigger just Minnesota-focused map, but you should know that the largest concentration of ash trees in the nation is in the northern third of Minnesota. And where we found the infestation is actually in one of the parts of the state that has the lowest concentration of ash trees. And so we really have much more than many states a business climate that's dependent upon this. Our forestry industries are about a $7 to $8 billion a year. It's been depressed recently. Part of our economy, tourism is a key part of our economy. And so I think that one of the important things that we have to do is rebuild our infrastructure, both eyes on the trees as well as awareness and ability of our local governments to step up.
I think for purposes of this discussion, it is the Department of Ag that has the first responsibility to keep this out of our state. And then the DNR responds when it gets in. Am I right about that?
Madam Chair, members, yes, that's correct. That's the way we have a very clear delineation of responsibilities and authorities.
Therefore, we do not want you to fail because our budget can't stand your failure, frankly. So I don't know how at this point in the budgeting process we address it other than to say perhaps we have to visit with the governor's office and ask him how he intends to respond so that we don't go into failure mode into the expense of trying to either contain and replace or just replace, because no matter what what happens, it's going to be very expensive. So it's not just throwing up your hands and saying, well, let it come, because if it comes, then too, we're spending a ton of money. So I am I'm at a loss, frankly, of what to do before we get a response from the governor. So I think that's one of the things that we need to ask our agencies to go back and have a discussion with the governor's office about how we should respond here. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if I missed it because I did come in a little bit after you'd already started, but you did mention that there are treatments available for the trees, that it's very labor intensive. Can you just tell me a little bit more about that, or have you already covered that ground?
Madam Chair, Representative, there are three basic injection type treatments, and they're similar to some of the old Dutch elm disease injection treatments. So you're putting insecticide, it gets into the phloem of the tree, and basically, so when the larvae begin feeding in that phloem, they encounter the insecticide. I should also mention that there's been a lot of work being done on biological. There's three stingless wasps that are under development. There's been some limited releases of those. They look as much as a 70% success in some early trial runs. So long term, I think that's going to have to be a major part of the solution. But that's 4 to 5 years out, is my understanding.
And so the reason I was asking is, you know, we are talking about federal stimulus dollars going towards some of the, oh, everything from the Youth Conservation Corps, the Naturalist Corps, the, you know, the different things. If there's labor-intensive ways that are, you know, being funded, and some, I'm just wondering if there's some connection we can make in some with some of these treatments. So it's just I'm wondering at this point, but it just seems like maybe there may be the timing of this could perhaps be.
Madam Chair, Representative, if I may add just a little bit more, there is also a new strategy that's being developed, which is sort of a compromise from not eradication, but more of a slowing. And part of that is a very labor-intensive, but what they do is they girdle trees in some of the central areas, and then girdle trees stresses the tree and basically attracts the beetles and then creates a sink. And so the plan is to try and concentrate the beetles and then to just take down those trees. It doesn't eradicate it, but they have had success as far as slowing the spread, and so that's another option that's being considered.
Members, are there other questions? I think I would like to hear just a moment from DNR. I have a business tonight, but I think it's important we understand what happens if the Department of Ag fails.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Bob Tomlinson, Assistant Director with the DNR Division of Forestry. I asked the tape to pass around. We got 15 copies, I apologize, of a map that we put together that relates to the elm, the ash population, ash and elm population in the communities throughout the state. And I think it's fairly helpful to kind of be able to visualize that and see what the population is in the community. As Representative Loeffler pointed out, he showed that map that shows the significant elm or ash population as well that we have in rural Minnesota on public land throughout the state. It's pretty significant. But I hand that out because I just wanted to emphasize. You asked what we're doing in the Department of Natural Resources, and I just want to kind of list off a few things that we are working on cooperatively with agriculture and otherwise with other folks relative to this situation. And I'll also try to mention where we're covered with this in the governor's budget recommendations for 10 and 11. Number one, we're partnering with MBA, APHIS, U.S. Forest Service, the Forest Resource Council, and a number of other people on planning for invasive species management. You know, there's been several things that have come out of late. There's the Forest Protection Plan, which Representative Loeffler served on that committee with folks from our agency and MBA and others to kind of come up with that. There's the EAB response plan, the Emerald Ash Borer response plan that we've worked on within the department for forested lands within in the state. There's a gypsy moth plan, management plan, and there's other examples like that that we continue to work on in collaboration with MDA and others as well. Secondly, we're administering the $500,000 bonding that came through last session for disease shade tree
removal and replacement. All of that money is spoken for right now. It's being contracted for, and I apologize, I don't have the exact numbers, but I want to say it's somewhere in the neighborhood of about 17 communities that applied for that money and will be receiving that. I do remember that we had over $700,000 worth of requests from the communities, and a committee put the recommendation together, and we're in the process of contracting out for that $500,000 of bonding. The third thing we're doing is the assessment. I sent around the map that we prepared. We're assessing for the communities around the state. We've already gone through every community in the state with student workers and interns and the like, driving around and doing street tree inventories, paid for, by the way, by the U.S. Forest Service, a federal grant, in order to come up with the maps that we show you to give us a pretty good indication of what the ash and elm population looks like in the communities throughout the state. We just recently received notice that we're going to get additional funding from the Fed to do the other genera within the communities in the state, so we'll have a more comprehensive look at what that looks like coming up.
Madam Chair, just so it's clear, this survey that he's referring to is by municipality, by city. The concentrations are actually kind of almost the opposite of it, in that the highest concentrations are in the area with the fewest dots, because there aren't as many cities up in that area. So this is not a full assessment of what the ash population is.
Yeah, I wanted to emphasize that that's just the municipalities throughout the state. That's not the rural places in the state. You need to look at both. The third thing that we're doing, the next thing we're doing, of course, is that, and this is included in the governor's budget rec for 10 and 11, will be to continue to do the continuous stand inventory that we do in excess of 100,000 acres per year on state forest land throughout the state. We're also, and I think this is pretty key, and we testified to this during the budget hearing, is that we're working to help build and maintain the capacity of local units of government. Currently, and this gets to this early detection, first detection piece of the strategy, we're increasing the number of tree inspectors throughout the state from 800 to 875 during the fiscal year 10 and 11 biennium. We're going to increase the number of communities in the state with tree inspectors from 475 up to 510, and we are increasing the first detectors, this is something new, up over 300. Now actually, there was just a training session for these first detectors, and the first detectors are specifically being trained to look for emerald ash borer, gypsy moth, and two other pests that I can't recall right now what they are, but those four things are really focused on looking for those and having those people strategically located throughout the state. I think Representative Loeffler's bill, the first item that she has on that bill, kind of speaks to the need for that. We'd like to see that up to about 1,000 first detectors here sometime in the next couple of years, and that's kind of what we're working for. The last thing, the other thing I would mention, two more things. One is working with the others to develop the prevention and management prescriptions. So how do we manage the situation either before it gets here, like by removing large ash trees in certain cases, or you know, reducing the ash population and such. And lastly is the public awareness, which you're, of course you're aware of, because you've probably seen billboards and news articles and other things like that. We work very closely with agriculture and others relative to that, those items. So those are some of the things that we're working on within the DNR and working collaboratively with NBA, APHIS, Forest Service, and others, kind of partnering with that. And with along with Representative Loeffler, really put a lot of time into this as well. We appreciate that.
Thank you. Is there anybody in the audience who would
To your point, Madam Chair, of the audience, I believe the Nursery and Landscape Association is in the audience, and Madam Chair, I guess I'd like to ask them a question if I could. I think they may be here.
That's what I was getting ready to do. But if Mr. Vlosser, while he's coming up, would you pass your map around? I would be delighted. Starting down there and that, and quickly around this quickly. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bob Fitch. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association. I appreciate the opportunity to speak real quickly. First of all, thank you to Representative Loeffler. She has been fabulous the last couple of years pushing this issue and has been a real leader in trying to keep this in front of all legislators. And she's been relentless in the pursuit of trying to do what's right for the urban and rural forests. Our organization has had a number of members on the Minnesota EAB Readiness Task Force, and I guess I would like to say that there is a very, very solid response plan in place. I think both Mr. Friesel and Mr. Tomlinson spoke to that, but as a third party, I guess I want to emphasize that there is a response plan in place. There's a broad spectrum of experts from the Department of Ag, from the DNR, from the University of Minnesota, from private industry, from other agencies that have all been involved with this, establishing this readiness task force, and they've collaborated to build a plan, and the procedures are well laid out, and with this occurrence right across the border, the plan is kicked in, and they are following through, and they are doing what they set out to do. We are fortunate here in Minnesota, for better or for worse, that our neighbors to the east of us got this before we did, so we had time to put together a plan. Within that plan, and I think this may speak to some of your questions, Madam Chair, and what are the most near-term financial needs? I guess, in my opinion, and I think in reading the EAB Readiness Task Force, the most near-term need would be for financial resources for public education to help contain the pest in as small an area as possible and to slow the spread. The reality is, unfortunately, we're probably not going to be able to completely stop this pest. But if we can slow it down, we can be better prepared. Everyone can be better prepared for the future. The sanitation, the cleanup efforts, and then ultimately the tree replacement efforts will be the real challenge and the real test of our commitment to the environment. Do we want to go backwards on the benefits that 900 million ash trees provide to this state today? Right now, the country is investing a lot of money in green infrastructure, such as solar and wind energy and new lighting, etc., and that's all vitally important. But I think the real challenge before us in the long term is, do we have enough foresight to invest in our forests and our street trees so that our generation, our children, and our grandchildren can enjoy these environmental benefits for decades to come? I can't speak to whether you can find millions and millions of dollars in your budget right now. I know how much of a challenge that is. But as the legacy funds are looked at, and as you look at future budgets, a commitment does need to be made to this state, to the state's environmental infrastructure, which does include trees. And I would strongly encourage the committee to take that long-term viewpoint.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Do you have a question?
Yeah, I did, Madam Chair. And just to the point, Mr. Fitch, Madam Chair, Mr. Fitch, the reality, unfortunately, Representative Hackbart is right. I mean, we can't spend $50 million like Michigan did and fail. It doesn't work to try and cut down all the ash trees. But I think we need to get the general public to know what's going on. You mentioned the readiness task force. It seems to me like we should have some money for education, Madam Chair, and I would hope that Mr. Friesel and Mr. Tomlinson will work with the governor's office and come back to find out what do we need to get some money to educate folks to what we can do with this. I don't think this is a matter of throwing millions of dollars at it. Unfortunately, money's not going to matter. We're losing this battle. We don't have anything to kill this bug that really works economically. And I guess, Mr. Fitch, I'm wondering, did you, in the readiness task force, did you guys ever talk about what it would take to educate, or if there was an involvement like that? Did you guys have a discussion
on that? I'm Madam Chair, Representative McNamara. I can't speak to an exact dollar figure. Certainly, the earlier you start, the less resources you're going to need ultimately. And I think we have a unique opportunity with it not actually in the state yet, but close enough that it's striking the fear of God into us, that we can jump on this early and often and get the messages out in a good fashion through the media. And I believe there's going to be some media coverage already from, I think, some of the TV stations may be covering it already. And use our extension service, use all the resources that are available through the cities, and by starting early, we don't have to do, we're going to need a media campaign of sorts, and I think Department of Ag has done a good job the last couple of years of trying to educate people not to move the firewood, and that's very key to this. We probably need to ramp that effort up even more.
Thank you. I don't see any more questions, but I appreciate your being here tonight. It's very helpful. And I don't see any other questions from members of Representative Loeffler. We are going to lay your bill over and hopefully hear from folks a little bit more about what they think the mission response should be. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I just want to acknowledge that there's a number of members from the Forest Protection Task Force who have also served on the EAB response plan here, and they're hoping that all of us will come together with something that works. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Representative Hansen, I believe you are next.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'd move House File 2295 for possible inclusion. Is that the motion?
Representative Hansen has moved House File 2295 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Environment Finance Omnibus Bill. I can't see that
slide. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House File 2295 is a DNR initiative to try to get more use relating to our state resources, our parks and our trails. It's a gift card system, and so it authorizes the commissioner to sell gift cards and certificates for licenses, permits, products, or services. It's an ongoing gift card and certificate sales. We did check with the Commerce Committee to see if there was any problem with some of the gift card legislation we passed the PAC, and the answer was no. I do have Commissioner Meyer here to describe the bill. Any questions that people have?
Madam Chair, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. The bill before you today is rather simple. Currently, the department has the authority to sell gift certificates, but that's kind of antiquated. So in looking at different ways for recruitment and retention tools, we discussed this issue of doing gift cards. This gift card would be eligible for a hunting license, a fishing license, a park permit, activities within the park. So currently right now, if I wanted to give my brother or a sibling or a friend of mine a hunting or a fishing license for a present, I can't do that right now. So this would allow me to buy a DNR gift card for maybe $30 or $27.50 if I want to do an exact amount on a license, and give that gift to somebody, and they could redeem it for any of those activities. Two really important points that Representative Hansen brings up, that the gift cards on lines 1.10 to 1.11, gift cards and certificates are valid until they are redeemed. So currently, I believe last session or two sessions ago, there was legislation passed that required that all gift cards sold in the state do not expire, so this is in compliance with that. Then if you go down to 1.19 to 1.12, this describes how those receipts will be deposited for gift cards that are sold but unredeemed. What we're looking for, you'll see money from gift cards and certificates sold but unredeemed after 3 years. shall be transferred to the various accounts and funds receiving revenue from purchases of licenses, permits, products, or services purchased with gift card or gift certificate redemptions in the last two fiscal years. So we'll look back at the past two fiscal years and, based upon that distribution formula, distribute those unredeemed values that we have in the account into those accounts, but that card will still remain valid. So it also goes on to say that the funds shall be distributed based on the dollar value of cards redeemed at, on a pro rata basis. So what we're looking to do is really help recruit or get people into the parks, get people out into whatever they want to do with the DNR as simply and easy as possible, and help have another tool to promote for Christmas sales and things like that.
Any questions for Representative Hansen or Deputy Assistant Commissioner Meyer? Do you have a question, Representative Hansen?
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, I think this is a clever idea. I'm glad you brought this forward. I just have one question. What happens if the interest doesn't cover the administrative costs? Where does the money get taken then to cover those costs?
Madam Chair, members, we would go through the process of looking at that pro rata basis and determine where those costs should be. We anticipate the administrative costs will be covered through the program. So I don't think that we would absorb those costs if they weren't covered by that those dollars.
I don't see any other questions. Anybody in the audience like to comment? I don't see any, so we will lay this over for possible inclusion. Representative Lilly. Representative Lilly, there is one amendment to show. Would you like to move the bill that it be passed, 1493 be passed as amended and returned to the Committee on Finance with the recommendation that it be re-referred to the Cultural and Outdoors Finance Committee?
So moved, Madam Chair. We have additional amendments as well.
Additional amendments. I see that there is one from Representative Dill. Would you like to move your amendment?
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so we are, I move the 1493A3 amendment.
Representative Dill has moved the A3 amendment. Representative Dill, would you like to describe it for members?
Thank you, Chair Wagenius and Representative Lilly. This does the same exact language in four different places in the bill. It's relative to, on page one, connecting people and improving access and conservation education and interpretive services for, and includes the words recreation areas and forest campgrounds. It does that in four different places, and some of, not exclusively, but there are some forest campgrounds that are even more busier than state parks, actually. I have a couple of instances up in my district that have significant numbers of state parks, and also those same things that could be said about recreation areas, so that the money can be appropriately used, and it's perfectly clear in the legislation. I thought that this was an appropriate amendment, and I'd stand for any questions.
Representative Lilly, would you like to comment on the amendment?
Madam Chair and members, I'm very comfortable with this amendment as presented. I think it's accurate. I think it's improves the bill.
I don't see any other questions or comments from members, so we will call for a vote on the amendment. All of those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? The amendment is adopted. Ms. Scott.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and I have discussed this with the author of the bill. Just a small oral amendment on line 8.15. Rather than March 1st, it would say March 10th. This was requested by the agency because of the difficulty in coordinating with all the different agencies in the Metro Parks group. So on 8.15, change the 1 to 10.
that is indeed a small oral amendment. Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair and members, again, I'm very comfortable with this. I think it moves us in the direction we want to go and helps that agency perform their tasks better.
I don't see any questions or comments from members, so we will vote on the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? That is adopted. Are there folks in the... I don't see any other amendments. We have asked that they come by 3 o'clock, and we were both were good about that. Are there folks in the amendments, in the audience that would like to comment on the bill? It's getting late. I don't see anybody who would like to comment. So with that, and I see questions from members, Representative Lilly, a final word.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. There was error made by myself. There was after our meeting this morning, there was a group of folks that gathered and had some concern about some of the wordage on the Parks and Trails grant program and on page 10 towards the bottom there. Our STAR staff got the amendment done, so thank you. I did not turn it in on time, so I think there's understanding that we will present that amendment and Representative Murphy's committee. And that should offer some clarity as far as who would qualify for the grant. Just to be clear now, just to give some indication, it's just that so that people outside the regional, but are the regional significance, they would meet that bar, but they're outside the current system. So we had opened that up, and just to be clear on that. So we intend to offer that, and again, my apologies.
Representative Anderson, did you have a question?
Yes, actually, Madam Chair, I have several questions to go through. I had the opportunity this afternoon to look through the bill, and I just wanted to have a chance to talk through some of these amendments, or the language in this bill. And Representative Lilly, I'm looking at page 2, and I noticed in here you have Representative Canusville on the summer internship program. And I'm just curious, are we providing a certain amount of money to be spent for that internship program from the natural resources allocation in here, or are we just leaving it up to them? What is the cost of that, and have we gotten estimates from the Department of Natural Resources?
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, the different areas are shown on the spreadsheet, but then beyond that, maybe if I could pass to the chair, please.
I will confirm this with Representative Canute, but I believe it's $216,000.
$216,000, and is that just for lines 2.9 to 2.12?
Yes.
And then how about for 2.13 to 2.16?
That would be $1,280,000.
$1,280,000?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All of this money is accounted for in this bill. Representative Lilly was very good about accounting.
Oh, yeah, and I don't doubt that at all. I was just looking to find out what the costs are for the individual, and since it's not broken out on the spreadsheet. And so the other question that I had is going further down, you've got the educational touchscreen computers, MP3 audio trail guides. What is the cost for those items?
That is, if I could, which one? Are you on line 222?
Yeah, 222 through 226.
Okay, and that would be $250,000.
And then going further down here, and I don't know if this is a question for you, Madam Chair, or for Representative Lilly, what was the logic behind the self-registration equipment being touchscreen displays?
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, perhaps you want to visit with the DNR?
I think
or is it Representative Knuth? I think it's Representative Knuth's bill, and then kind of incorporate it into mine. So if you don't mind, I'll pass to Representative Knuth.
Sure.
This time. And then on just to your numbers, I could certainly sit down with you and go through the numbers on each item, if that would be helpful.
It would be wonderful if I could just get a spreadsheet for each one of these little areas of how much it is. And then I'll stop asking questions about the cost side of things, and then we can just get to the other questions. Is that all right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Representative.
Could you just talk a little bit about this self-registration?
Madam Chair, Representative Sanders, Committee, just to be clear, my bill did not include line 2.22 to 2.26. I think that was one of the agency or governor's initiatives, if I'm correct on that.
Yes.
In terms of the information centers, kiosks, we're trying to make it more user-friendly if they come in at times where it's not staffed, those sorts of things. And I don't claim to be an expert on how people use state parks. I generally look to the DNR for that information. And so I did get this language from them in terms of how we can try some new things that hopefully make our parks more accessible, user-friendly, and can be used long-term. And so if the DNR wants to talk about that more, I did work with them to try to make this fit with what they thought would be useful and helpful rather than us just saying from the legislature, this is the way we think people use state parks.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Knuth. It might be helpful to have the DNR come down. As somebody that has used forest campgrounds and represented the Dills district, I've had to do self-registration quite a bit, and it's pretty easy to do right now, pretty self-explanatory. I'm just wondering why we're going to technology, and I'm just concerned about how we're really going to maintain that kind of equipment and so forth, vandalism, all that good stuff.
Welcome to the committee.
Representative Anderson, Madam Chair, for the record, Forrest Dolan, the Deputy Director of the Parks and Trails Division. What we would like to do is to try some of these new kiosks. They are self-registration kiosks, so that alleviates some of the staff time for having people there 24 hours a day. In addition to that, it also allows folks to use a credit card. So if you're familiar with using the self-registrations, a lot of times you have to use cash or a check, and we're finding that people aren't always using that as much anymore, and it's much more convenient for the credit card. So again, self-registration allows you to swipe your card, trying to be more user-friendly in that area. In addition to that, these kiosks also provide an educational opportunity as well. So maybe you could get on there and take a look at the map that's available for the park, or view some of the history that's available there. So kind of a multi-faceted approach with that electronic piece of equipment.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And then moving on to the bill, I am on page 3. On 3.3 to 3.7, what trails are we talking about on this little piece?
What?
3.3 to 3.7.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, the idea here is to take five of our top trails in the state, like the Root River Trail or the Gateway Trail, some of the large state trails, and really rehab the entire mapping system, all of the kiosks for information and interpretation, and a lot of our trail systems were built 25 years ago now, and we have not upgraded any of those for signing and all of those things on those trails. So this is really about a total renewal, so that the people really see what we're doing with this legacy dollars.
Have you, Madam Chair, have you then, you say it's going to be the top five, you've identified those trails at this time, or that you haven't at this point?
At this time, we've got ideas where we would put that, but we're also you know, looking at the dollar amount that we would get with the bill, we think we can do the five, and we would propose the Root River Trail, the Cicada Trail, the Gateway Trail, and I'm not sure about the others. I just don't have the information with me. I know those were some of the top three, probably the Munger Trail as well.
Okay. And Madam Chair, further down on that page, we're getting in lines, probably starting at 316 and going all the way to the end of the page, different pieces of these. It picks out a threshold that you have to meet, and I'm just wondering if the department can comment on whether these are achievable. And were these numbers that you, were these numbers brought by the department of this is what we can do?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, these were department numbers. We thought we could do these particular numbers of acres under each of these categories.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, I was just kind of thinking back to your kiosk thing, and my understanding is the governor is very interested in this, and probably as a parent of teenage daughters, he's got some, he's very technology savvy or whatever, and realizes that might appeal to him. There was some concern brought to my attention on page 4.9. I think there was asked the question, is it says about the 100 miles, and I'm not sure that that's quite right. So to be in full disclosure and full honesty, we might have to look at that number at some point. So, okay.
That's great. Thank you. And then on that same page, going down to line 4.20, it's talking about installing the solar energy equipment. And well, if you could include that in the cost spreadsheet that you're going to have too.
Yes.
Okay.
Happy
thank
to
you.
Do that.
And I promise I'll try and rush through here the rest.
Madam
Chair, covers it. I think it covers that.
Madam Chair and members, I'm happy to submit the numbers to all members if they would find that to be helpful and to send that out.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have a question while Director Bowe is down there. On line 4.8 through line 4.15, Representative Lilly or Director, do you know how much money will we actually spend to maintain the seal coat, mill or overlay or a complete rehabilitation? I'm a big fan that we should be putting some money on the ground and doing these trails now because we have been underfunding the maintenance. Do you have an idea how much money we are talking about here and how soon would potentially that work be able to start?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, we plan on doing this work just as soon as possible. Some of this could actually be done yet this summer, especially some of the seal coating projects. The things that would require engineering services, of course, would be delayed until toward the end of the summer. We have to do that engineering type of work first. And I don't recall what the price tag is for this piece. It will probably be in the spreadsheet that Representative Lilly would provide you.
Okay. Were there any more questions? Yep. Representative Anderson. Madam Chair, just two more questions. I'm looking on page 10 and line 20. And it talks about directing the Met Council to provide a match of $2 of the Council's bond for every $3 of state funds. And if I'm understanding correct, I believe that the Met Council right now is in debt. Do we know that they have the capacity to put this match forward? Or?
We will have the answer to that question momentarily.
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Arnie Steffrud. I'm a planning analyst in the Parks Program at the Metro Council. And in answer to your question, yes, the Council has, by statute, the ability to issue bonds for the parks program. They have been doing that on a consistent basis since 1994. And this appropriation and the amount that's here, the council could issue a match of bonds to the appropriation that's proposed in this bill.
Okay. And then, Madam Chair, one last question. I am on the very last page, and it's talking about the match. Do we have a match requirement now, and if so, how much is it? I'm looking at 11.2 and 11.3.
Madam Chair, actually, that I believe that's the DNR.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean for that to be for you.
Because that's the state, it's the grant program that the DNR I'm sorry, Madam Chair, yep. Representative Anderson. I believe that's the state program that the DNR oversees now.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, that's correct. We have a current grant program. I believe it's in 85.019, and it requires a 50% match for that regional trail and regional park program.
Okay, thank you.
I am seeing no more questions, and we've already asked the audience for comments, and I didn't see any of those. So Representative Lilly renews this motion that House Law 1493 be passed as amended and returned to the Committee on Finance with the recommendation that it be re-referred to the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposition? Bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, please consider stopping us and offering further ideas to the bill if you have thoughts as it moves forward.
Members, I would like to renew my motion. I understand there are several amendments, so I will move that House File 1973 be recommended to pass, to be re-referred to the Committee on Finance with the recommendation that it be referred to the Cultural and Outdoor Committee.
As amended. And we do have some amendments here. Representative Torkelson, you have an A1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd prefer to do the DE2 first, if that's okay with the Chair.
That'll be fine. Do the DE2 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius. The DE2 amendment is the language from Representative Eakin's bill that he presented some time ago. I know the hour is late, and it's been a long day for all of us. I don't care to drag this on too lengthy, but I do want to make a couple of very important points. One is that the Eakin bill, the DE2 amendment, more closely reflects the presentation of the Clean Water Council, and as you all know, the Clean Water Council has been meeting for 2 years in a very public fashion and working hard on the area of clean water. It incorporates a wide variety of interests, and I just have a strong feeling that their bill does reflect a good, well-structured, well-thought-out plan. I won't belabor a lot of specific points, but one point I would like to cover is that the Eakin bill does send quite a bit more money to Bowser, and coming from rural Minnesota and having a strong farm background, I understand and appreciate how well Bowser and RCS people work with landowners, and I do believe that the desire of folks that voted for the constitutional amendment was to see as much money hit the ground, so to speak, as possible. And they have the structure in place and the people in place and the methodology available to them that will allow them to do that in a rapid fashion. And that is really the main reason I'm offering this DE2 amendment. And I would request a roll call vote.
Roll call been requested. Representative Guinness.
Members, I would ask you to vote against this amendment, and I'm going to give you just two reasons. House File 1773 spends money in many of the same ways that were recommended by the Clean Water Council. One major difference is that the Clean Water Council did not propose any outcomes for the money. And we passed a bill earlier this session to the Cultural and Outdoors Committee that said for the money that we spend with the new dollars, there should be defined outcomes that citizens could see and that they would know what they're getting for their new dollars. I feel very committed to that. I think a lot of you are too. Secondly, Representative Torkelson, your bill appropriates from the money from the Department of Agriculture. We do not have jurisdiction there. So with those reasons, members, I would ask you to vote no.
Ready to Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, I'm just curious, can you tell me what's the potential difference between Representative Eakin's bill that Representative Torkelson has moved in the potential fees for our local communities and businesses, the difference between what they could be under your bill and what they are in Representative Eakin's bill? Isn't there the potential for there to be tens of millions of dollars of fees in the next biennium additional in your bill with the MPCA in additional fees potentially? Am I right on that?
Representative McNamara, this bill has no potential fees in it that I know of. So it doesn't have any potential fees in it that I know of.
Okay. Well, I'm confused then, Madam Chair. I'll regroup on my thought. Thank you.
Any other comments? We're ready to take the vote. Okay, the clerk will take the roll. Chair votes no.
Wagenius?
No.
Backfire? Backfire?
Oh.
Sorry.
Yep.
Anderson?
Aye.
Anzos? Clark?
No.
Doe?
No.
Doty?
No.
Gunther? Hamilton? Hanson?
No.
Portman?
No.
Two?
No.
Lilly?
No.
McNamara?
Aye.
Galsy?
No.
Torkelson?
Yes.
Four ayes and nine nays.
We have four ayes and nine nays, so the amendment is not adopted. And let's see here now. Representative Torkelson, should we move to the A1 then?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the A1 amendment. The A1 amendment relates to the Comprehensive Statewide Sustainable Water Resources 25-year detailed framework. It moves that funding back to feedlot water quality improvement grant. Again, really the same argument, that we really feel that these funds are meant to result in projects that people can see and touch and feel, and this 25-year, $750,000 study really does not meet the desired outcomes of the constitutional amendment.
Representative Guinness.
Members, I would ask you to vote no on this. The statewide plan actually passed and is in Representative Murphy's committee. Just as a matter of keeping the books balanced and showing you that the books are balanced, we carried the money here. It is not technically correct, but only to show you that the books are balanced.
I think it would not serve Minnesotans well if we spent tons and tons of their money without their being able to see in the long run the outcome that they want to see. And I think we owe that to Minnesotans to have a plan that they can see and to keep us on that plan. Secondly, in terms of feedlots, and you're putting more money into feedlots, taking money from that and putting more money into feedlots, this is bringing this bill early is one of the downsides of not having the omnibus bill, but there will be money for feedlots in the base omnibus bill. This money is in addition to that, and this money is for feedlots on riparian areas alone. So with that, members, I'd ask you to vote no.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just request a roll call vote on this, please.
Roll call has been requested. Any other comments or questions? We'll request to take the roll. Chair votes no.
Virginia?
No.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Anzal? Clark?
No.
Jost?
No.
Doty?
No.
Gunther? Hamilton? Hanson?
No.
Portman?
No.
Knuth?
No.
Lilly?
No.
McNamara?
Aye.
Scalzi?
No.
Torkelson?
Aye.
Well, we got a sheet going here. We got 4 ayes and 9 nays. The amendment is not adopted. And Representative Hackbarth, A2 amendment, please.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and hopefully we'll do a little bit better on this one. This amendment deletes Representative Hansen's language about the Mississippi River Corridor critical area. This takes out all the language starting on page 15 and also takes the money that is in the bill for the rulemaking and actually puts it towards something that we need to do that was in the governor's bill and wasn't funded in this bill for Bowser. And as you can see on the amendment 1.6 through 1.10, where the money goes, it's not for the amount that the governor proposed. The governor had $330,000 the first year and $650,000 the second year that this bill does not fund whatsoever. So I would give $225,000 each year for the Bowser for these issues. And I'd take any questions to the amendment.
Representative Gania.
Members, I would ask you to vote no on this amendment. This is Representative Hansen offers another piece of big picture, long-term work that we need to do in this state. And with that, I'd like to have any other comments come from Representative Hansen.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Reverend Muginius. I would ask members to oppose this amendment. This is deleting language that has gone, has been presented in 4 committees and passed through 3 committees. It's been modified throughout the process. The Mississippi River Critical Corridor Area, we've had a report done by the DNR, we've had a working group, and we've had a wide range of testimony, and it has got to this point. We've provided funding for the rulemaking from the Clean Water Fund, and we have also noted that the Mississippi River is an important water resource for our area. And so I think that the work that's been done and what the bill does, updating the 1979 executive order, we've had testimony in this committee and in other committees that it's a valuable effort in terms of both policy and the finance.
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Hansen. Well, yes, we did have a lot of testimony about this, and testimony that I heard, there were a number of businesses and citizens along the river that are very, very upset about this. It's much more restrictive, I do know people that live along the river. They're not happy with this language. It makes it much more restrictive for people to live along the Mississippi River, and I've got a lot of people that are very, very concerned about the legislation, Representative Hansen, and that's why I bring this amendment.
Okay.
Representative Hope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to thank Representative Hansen for taking into account some comments that were made by constituents of mine and some suggested language, and including that which will provide notice for the communities that are affected and then will require the cities to provide notice to the homeowners to the best of their ability. I do have a number of constituents who are really concerned and want to be involved in the rulemaking process, and so I do appreciate those efforts very much.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions. I believe Representative Wagenius or Representative Hansen, they may be for either one of them. I'm curious. We have in place Governor Quay's ruling that that he signed in place. And why would we want to spend this $450,000 for to amend that? Is that not working today? Is it not effective? And then I'll start with that one first. Why do we need to do that, and why would it make more sense to spend that money on bureaucracy and rulemaking if we already have something in place when we could be putting the money on the ground?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, the reason is that the rulemaking, I believe, will help businesses and communities along the river within the corridor. You'll be able to have an open hearing process, statement of need of reasonableness. You'll be able to have public input. The 1979 executive order are the current regulations now. It designates four districts within the critical area that I believe, if we apply today's technology, have an open process, we can provide clarity and help to those communities and those businesses and those citizens that are along the river. The report that was done by the DNR and provided to us in January of last year said that the current system is inherent with conflict. You have a multitude of local units of government that exists through there. There are people within those agencies or within those businesses. You have changes that go on. We've had 30 years of the executive order. And providing for the rules, provide for that update, to clarify and to clean up and to provide that help where the public can be involved. And what we've done since, I believe, Representative McNamara, when we heard it last here is, in committee, we added that the rulemaking should take into account those local units of government interests and concerns. In addition, the language provides for some notification to help involve citizens make sure that they're aware of the rulemaking process. I believe at the end of the day, the rulemaking process will help out rather than taking the executive order and simply codifying it in its district. What we're doing here, based on input from local units of government, is to go through the rulemaking process, which will provide a good framework for the next 30 years. I think it will help out, ultimately. I think making sure that there's the transparency and involvement from local units of government and business will make sure that those things happen.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then again, either for Representative Wagenius or I believe, again, it may be for Representative Hansen. I'm concerned about the supplanting or how we're justifying using dedicated funding money that I think folks envisioned would be going on the ground for cleaning non-point and point source pollution, and we're going to use it to fund the DNR for rulemaking for something that's been in place for decades now. How do we say this is what the intent was with the legislation?
Representative Wagenius.
Can I answer that question? I would ask you to look on 17, 18, and 19. This is one of the instances here where the language says that this is to protect and preserve the biological and ecological functions of the Mississippi River and its corridor. Protecting this river is exactly what citizens wanted. I mean, they wanted all rivers protected. They certainly didn't want this river excluded. So I think this is, we are
doing the citizens' bidding. Representative Hansen may have other answers, but I think that one is right on the dime.
President Heckler.
Mr. Chairman, I'd ask for roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Any other questions or comments? Quick, pick the roll. Chair votes no.
Wagenius?
No.
Heckler?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Anzos? Clark?
No.
Bill?
No.
Cody?
No.
Gunther? Hamilton? Hansen?
No.
Portman?
Aye.
Smith?
No.
Lilly?
No.
McNamara?
Aye.
Scalzi?
No.
Torkelson?
Aye.
We've got 5 ayes and 9 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Gaines.
Council brought a technical amendment to me, if members wouldn't mind. I do think it is genuinely technical, and just a something that was missed in line 12.1. The money is to go, says in the bill, is to go to first tier, and I would like to delete first and put in second.
Line 12.1, delete the word first and insert the line second. And Representative Guinness moves that amendment.
I do.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment adopted. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, I'm looking on page 3 of the bill, starting at line 3.12, and it's talking about giving money to political subdivisions for up to 50% of the cost of capital projects. That you've treated municipal water instead of groundwater, and there's some golf courses out there that do this. Would this mean that they'd be able to access this money for golf courses?
No, this is not for golf courses.
Is that defined, Madam, Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, is that defined somewhere? Or?
I asked for the pollution control agency to help with this language, and one of the things we were trying to do was actually help industry in Minnesota, big businesses. And so that is what we're doing here.
Mr. Chair?
Representative.
Did you say that you were? This was an idea to help businesses
mm-hmm.
and a golf course? Then
big businesses that are going to use a substantial amount of water. And as it was drafted, this is how the pollution control agency helped me draft this.
Okay. Thank you. I have a couple more questions here. Mr. Chair.
Please proceed.
Representative Wagenius. Now I'm on page 6. And I remember hearing this in committee, and it was my understanding at this time, I'm on line 6.25, and it's talking about those maps, the data, the elevation, high resolution digital elevation data. And the way I understood it in committee is that there are some communities that have gone ahead and done this on their own. And the way I read this language, when you say that the state is going to complete acquisition of that data, are we paying those entities for the data? And then is it based upon what you've put here that have previously received state funds for acquiring and distributing the data? So are we paying them for an item that we've already given them funding for? Or help me through that part.
If I could, this is a proposal that Representative Hansen brought to us, and he is a better expert on this than I am. I sense a very strong sense in our committees that this would be extraordinarily helpful in flooding and in restoration, and that we would spend our money much more wisely if we had this kind of data. So with that, I would ask Representative Hansen to tell you about those specific lines.
Representative Hansen, and I actually have the university here that's able to testify. Could you repeat the lines to me again?
Yeah, it's line 6.25 through 6.28. And I'm trying to remember from the testimony when you presented your bill.
Right.
It's my understanding that there's communities out there that they have gone ahead and they have done this on their own. But the way that I read the bill is the state then is going to pay them to acquire that data. But then reading here, it sounds like the state has already given them funds. Are we duplicating efforts, or am I just reading this wrong? Maybe I'm...
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, you are reading it correctly. I did have an oral amendment that I was going to bring up that there should be a word that was missed on line 6.26
okay.
after have, not.
Okay.
So I have it written here. I was waiting. So you got the correction that is needed.
Representative Hansen, would you like to offer that amendment?
Our Senator Anderson can offer.
No,
Representative Anderson.
I just kept reading it through, and you know how that happened.
I would move the oral amendment of not add the word not after have on line 6.26.
I mean 6.26, and add not after the word have. Okay. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment's adopted.
Mr. Chair, I just have a couple more questions left, and then I promise I will be done.
Please proceed.
I am going next to page 11, and it's with the Department of Health, and I don't know if anybody from them is here tonight, but it's similar to a question that I asked Representative Lilly on. It says it has a threshold, says assisting 30 or more communities. Then it goes on to 20 more communities and so forth. Do we know if this is achievable? Is this are these figures that they gave to you?
Representative Virginia.
These are direct figures from the Department of Health.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chair, Representative Virginia, just further down there, we're talking at line 11.27, and it talks about no health-based drinking water standard exists. What contaminants are out there that we don't have a health-based drinking water standard currently? Do you have a list of something like that?
Representative McGinnis.
The health department has a very, very long list
of
things that are unregulated at this point. We are not tagging any one of them in particularly in this bill. This is the language that came directly from the health department.
Mr. Chair, Representative, would it be possible to get that list from the Department of Health?
If they have that list, we can certainly ask for it. We'll do that.
Okay, that would be great. And then my final question, Mr. Chair, is on page 12. I am looking at line 18. And I remember, Representative Virginia, I know you had these folks come in, but I don't remember the details of exactly what does this appropriation cover. Is it how many staff people... What are the expectations of administrative costs? And if you have a breakdown of that and that you can email it to me, that would be great. But if you know it right off the top of your head right now, that would be helpful.
Representative McGinnis.
This is just somewhat similar to the statewide plan, where the bill has gone forward and is already in Representative Murphy's committee. But to make us as accountable as possible, we carry the money in here. And this is for the Legislative Coordinating Committee to do a website, and so people will know exactly how their money is spent. This is the Clean Water Fund portion of that. And similarly, there might be a portion for the legislative auditor. And that's all that's going on here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lee, so it's for the cost of the website and then cost of the legislative auditor to do the tracking?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions from members? Seeing none, anybody in the audience care to testify on the bill? I had Mr. Larson. Please identify yourself for the
record. Mr. Chair and members, my name is Dan Larson. I am the administrator of the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, 25 rural counties that operate as a caucus within the Association of Minnesota Counties. I want to recognize first and foremost the good work that the chairman and the committee has done in putting this bill together, a number of good projects that have been funded, but recognize that we do have one concern. And you may remember Representative Olin presented a bill on Thursday evening, and that bill would have appropriated grant money to local governments to cover the cost of implementing new major changes to the 2008 construction stormwater permit. Now, this would affect your county engineers on road projects that are within a certain proximity, a mile, of an impaired water. So these are additional costs from the additional costs in the 2009 construction season that were not there prior to August 1st of 2008. That's when engineers received a letter from the MPCA. So the concern is, while funding for the purpose was not included in the recommendations, we want the committee to know we believe a successful argument could be made for funding these projects from the dedicated clean water fund, and that we recognize there was a lot of competition for the money, but these are for this funding. But these projects are, we believe this is a serious concern in that in choosing not to fund these additional costs, that we've chosen water protection over the protection of people on rural highways. There are very limited, and you heard testimony from the county engineer, Marshall County, very limited funding for highways, as you know. And this is a leakage of those very limited and precious highway dollars that we use to make highways safer. So we hope that next year, when we come back, that we'll be a little more persuasive in our argument. So with that, we don't have amendments. We just want to make sure that the issue resonates and that we thank the committee for its time.
Thank you, Mr. Larson, for your testimony. And I recognize the issue, as I said the other evening. It is tough on our rural county. So thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lagunas, we had added some language into that part of the bill that Representative Anderson talked about, and I just wanted to ask the DNR about that on lines 6.31, 32, 33, 34, 35.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources.
Mr. Chair, Assistant Commissioner Meyer, have you looked at the language, and is it something that the department can do? Or?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe Representative Hansen is referring to language that's contained on line 6.31 to 6.32 in the section. We have looked at this, and no, it's not a governor's recommendation. The language that says the commissioner shall utilize department staff whenever possible. This is what the intent would be anyway. We would take this program, and utilize our staff wherever possible. And we're not. We will work with University of Minnesota or the contractors that are selected to do this project.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. I had on the list here from the audience, or had somebody that had requested it. I have Bruce. If there's a Bruce in the audience that wanted to testify, this is your chance. If not, forever hold your peace. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion if there's somebody else.
Representative Genius renews her motion that House File 1973 be passed as amended and returned to the Committee on Finance with the recommendation that it be re-referred to Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
The bill's passed.
I just wanted, if I could, Mr. Chairman, take this opportunity to thank all the folks who worked so hard on this clean water language.
Okay.
This is a bill with many, many authors and many little pieces that came together to make a whole, and I just truly appreciate all the work that's done.
We've got a couple of minutes to get out of the way here. Representative Knuth?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes of March 31st and April 2nd.
We have the minutes of March 31st and April 2nd moved. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Minutes approved. We stand adjourned.